5 years ago this month, Facebook's chief operating officer, Sheryl Sandberg, challenged women to summon their determination and hard work to get their fair share in the workplace. Her book, Lean In, Women, Work, and the Will to Lead, was on the New York Times bestseller list for more than a year. Those two words, lean in, caught on in many corners of our society. So where is lean in today? We're exploring that question here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Helene Olin is a writer and contributor to The Nation magazine. Her latest piece there is 5 years later, Lean In Seems Like a Relic from Another Time. She also contributes to The Washington Post, and she's author of Pound Foolish, Exposing the Dark Side of the Personal Finance Industry. Helene, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Well, before we talk about where Lean In is today, let's remember this book. Give us that general gist of what Lean In was all about.
Lean In, which was published five years ago this month, was by Sheryl Sandberg. And it was a book urging women to not leave the workforce before they left the workforce, that we all need to lean in, and that if we allow ourselves to be discouraged, we will get pushed out and, you know, out of the places we want to be. So we sort of have to force our way into the conversation by, you know, refusing to take no for an answer, by working with authority to get ahead, and by just working as hard as we can and as smart as we can, basically.
But this was also a time when, this was more written toward women in corporate America, and so many women felt left out of this book.
Right. I mean, right from the get-go, it sold millions of copies, but the book was controversial. And it was controversial, I should say, for a couple of reasons. The first is what you mentioned, is that it was really written, it read like a corporate 1980s manual, sort of an updated twist on it, right? How to get to the corner office. And, of course, most women actually don't work in corporate settings, or at least at that level. They're in pink-collar jobs or blue-collar jobs. So that was controversial. The second part that was controversial is a number of feminists pointed out that it really wasn't that realistic to tell people who had, say, children to lean in all the time. Like one example Sheryl Sandberg used in the book, if I'm remembering right, was how she would indeed leave the office at 5:30 or so, come home, have dinner with her family, and go back to work. First of all, as a lot of us who have worked in offices know, it's not just that easy to walk out the door at 5:30. And second, people do get tired. It's hard to go back to work at like 7-8 o'clock at night, right? Or after 9 o'clock after your children go to bed. So there was criticism on that line too. And third, of course, was that it seemed to be a very upper middle class, leaning white sort of view of the world. That, you know, this wasn't going to be that applicable for minorities or people who had faced discrimination in the office.
When you say pink-collar jobs, what do you mean by pink-collar jobs?
Secretaries, administrative assistants, as we're supposed to say, traditional female work, whether it's a beauty salon, fill in the blank, basically.
So there's been a lot of talk about this anniversary in the media. What do you make of this discussion here at 5 years? I think Sheryl Sandberg laughed in response to it, saying, 5 years isn't a long time, guys.
Well, I mean, part of the reason I wrote the article is I don't want to disagree with you, but I actually felt there wasn't that much attention paid to it. It was a book that sold millions of copies, was truly a worldwide phenomenon. And about all there was inside the New York Times piece about it, there was a cover of Bloomberg Business Week and a CNN Money short piece, and maybe one or two others, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was not a lot for something that sold millions of copies. And I sort of was like, well, why is that? And why isn't it resonating? And I really started to think about where women are today versus 5 years ago. And the book just sort of seemed quaint, to, you know, put it mildly. I felt that the conversation had moved on in all sorts of different ways. And I started thinking that, I should say, before the most recent blow-up of Facebook scandals, which I think also did play a role in this.
How has the conversation moved on, in your opinion?
Well, I think the conversation became more political. I mean, the thing about Lean In that I felt was so striking, and I've written various pieces about this over the years saying so, was that Sheryl Sandberg seemed to implicitly assume that the reason women weren't getting ahead in the workforce was because of sort of all these well-meaning but clueless guys who ran the place, right? And all we needed to do was work hard, refuse to leave, and when problems cropped up, we needed to go in and discuss them. There's kind of a famous example from the book where she realizes she's 6 or 7 months pregnant. She can barely get around, as the way it happens when you're late pregnancy. And she wants a car parking spot closer to the front door of the building. And she marches into her CEO's office at Google, because, of course, she's in the top group herself, and says, "I need a parking space." And they give her one. I think we all know most of us don't have that sort of relationship with the people who run the offices, our offices. But it was more than that. It was just this assumption that you could ask and it would happen, that you needed to make your case for it and it would happen. And honestly, if it was that easy, it would have happened by now. People have been writing that various ways around that now for 30-plus years. It's not that easy. Power doesn't necessarily share that easily. And that, to me, was sort of the main thing that drove me.
Helene Olin is with us. She's a writer and contributor to The Nation magazine. Her latest piece there is 5 years later, Lean In Seems Like a Relic from Another Time. You can join in with your thoughts, your insights on Lean In. Did you read Lean In at any point in the last 5 years? What did you make of it? Did it change the way you approached issues in the workplace? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Helene, before we get into a big argument about with your piece, I want to ask more of a broader question. Do you think Lean In has been good for women?
I think it was good in that it opened a conversation that needed to be had. Do I think it was good in that the idea that if you work harder, you will get ahead? We work really hard in this country. I mean, we work harder than almost any other first world country. I think there was just an inherent unfairness of telling women that they still had to work harder and smarter to get ahead that just never quite sat well with me.
What about this whole notion of this glass ceiling, that women fitting into power structures versus tearing them down or shattering that glass ceiling? Is that an appropriate metaphor?
It's hard to question it at this point because in some ways I do think it's an appropriate metaphor, right? Because women do seem to be stuck under it or outside of it, however you want to think of it. But it also leaves people out because it assumes everybody wants to get ahead all the time. And I think a lot of the times people just want to be treated with respect.
We also, alongside the words Lean In, heard women, especially on social media, saying they're leaning out. What did lean out have? What kind of life did that lead?
Well, this is something I've talked about in two different ways, right? In first, of course, lean out can be just, I can't work that hard, right? What I've been talking about. But I also think, and I think this was something the book sold short, is that women do face a lot of barriers in the workplace, right? We are underpaid. We do deal with discrimination, as the Me Too movement, has really pointed out. There's loads of data to show that women are judged much more harshly in the workplace than men, which was an article I wrote about a few months ago, where, women literally don't speak up as often because they are shouted down, where if a woman makes a mistake, she is judged much more harshly than a man. The best data point I saw on that was a study done out of Sweden a few years ago, where they looked at what happened if a surgeon was operating on a patient and the patient passed away on the table. And male surgeons still had patients referred to them, but not women. And you could just sort of go on this. And, of course, then there's the issues at home where women, you know, generally take on more of the burden. And, you know, leaning out was a rational response to it. It was self-destructive, perhaps. But it wasn't the most irrational response anyone had ever come up with. And I think that was also probably should have been a more prominent part of the conversation. Not just you need to lean in, but why aren't you?
We're exploring the conflicted nature of Lean In on the fifth anniversary of the book's publishing. Helene Olin stays with us. She's a writer and contributor to The Nation magazine, been writing about Lean In 5 years later. Did you read the book at any point in the last 5 years? What did you make of it? How did your life change? 800-642-1234. News is next. Five years ago, Facebook executive Sheryl Sandberg wrote the blockbuster book Lean In, and it triggered a worldwide conversation about workplace equality and work-life balance. But has it made any material difference? Your thoughts on Lean In at 5-800-642-1234. Do you see women changing the dynamics, challenging the power structure in society as opposed to just fitting into it? Or have you seen more women, air quotes here, leaning out? Call in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Helene Olin recently wrote about Lean In for The Nation magazine. She's author of Pound Foolish, Exposing the Dark Side of the Personal Finance Industry. Helene, you write in your piece that professional women are taking collective action rather than just individual action, and that kind of runs contrary to what Lean In was all about. Can you give us some examples of this?
I felt that this has really been going on pretty much since the 2016 presidential election and the Women's March, right, where women are just sort of leaning in, all right, but they're not leaning in at the at the office one by one. We've had the Women's March. We've had the Me Too movement, which has just seemed to pick up and gather steam over the past several months. That, you know, they are working on political campaigns now. We have more women running for Congress than ever before. People are sort of insisting that they be in on the conversation, but they're not doing it by going into the corner office and making their case to the boss about why they are so helpful and why they should be there. They are insisting on being there. They are breaking down the barriers, and they are doing it really together. So it is a form of leaning in, but it's just not the leaning in that the book really foresaw happening.
Before we get to the influence of the Me Too movement, You talk about that Lean In falls squarely in the genre of self-help, which shouldn't be political, and yet it's as political as any genre can get. How is that the case?
Self-help is a kind of fascinating genre because nobody ever thinks of it as political, though it's always worth noting that the great, great bestsellers of the self-help movement, Dale Carnegie's breakout book and Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, actually came out of the Great Depression when people were looking for answers, right? But the issue with the self-help books is that they're almost always telling us that we can change our circumstances in the greater world, right? And there's nothing in and of itself wrong with that message. We could all always stand to improve ourselves, right? That's sort of the human condition, is to strive to do that. But they're political in a strange way, because they're ultimately telling you, without using really the words to say it, that the world around us is more or less fine. We are the ones who have to change ourselves to fit into it. So, in other words, we need to work harder to get promoted, right? The world, you know, isn't just going to be equal for women. It's that we have to work harder, and we have to present our case, and we have to learn how to negotiate in ways that don't make the men angry who have power but still get our case, you know, heard and get ourselves put in a position to be somewhere. And I think ultimately women realized that this wasn't working out so well for them. It wasn't really helping that many people. The fact of the matter is, if it had helped that many people, Sheryl Sandberg's book would have never had to be written. People don't generally walk into the office looking to make people angry every day.
Well, let's explore a little bit here, Me Too. There was another piece in The Nation from December that had the headline, Me Too has debunked the lean-in philosophy. Would you agree with that assessment, or is the answer not so clear?
I think I would agree. Disclosure, I'm friendly with the woman who wrote the piece, so I know the piece pretty well. Me Too sort of presented... The thing that always struck me about Lean In was that, as I said earlier, it just sort of assumed the office was run by a bunch of sort of, well-meaning male, guys who just didn't really think about the problems of women and didn't quite realize they weren't promoting women and didn't, and if they thought about it, it was brought to their attention and you made your case in this reasonable, calm way, we'd all land in the promised land. And I think it was nice to think that was true, but I think it really defied reason. And I think what Me Too really highlighted was really sort of the nasty cross currents, and in this case, in the Me Too movement, the extremely nasty cross currents that really impact women in the office, or on the job, I should say. I'm really revealing my own bias there, right? Mm. That it's not just simply a matter of presenting your case, that women are really discriminated against at the workplace. And Me Too was in a particularly heinous way, right, in sexual harassment. But again, it goes back to how women are underpaid from the get-go, that the studies show that when women try to negotiate for more work as something Lean In, urge them to do, they are actually more likely to not get the job. That women who job hunt earn less money than women who stay in one place versus men who do job hunt, who do increase their salary because women have to lean in and prove themselves, whereas men are promoted on promise, and so on down the line.
So this conversation can get political pretty quickly because when you look at the policies inside many companies regarding sexual harassment and going through arbitration versus not, Facebook decided to have to keep its structure pretty corporate, and Sheryl Sandberg was behind that as well. So she too is towing the line.
Correct. And her, when she's confronted on it, and I should just back up to say for listeners who aren't following this, there's arguments about when you go forward with sexual harassment claims, in many cases people can't turn to the courts because they've signed contracts with their employers that mandate arbitration. Arbitration generally favors employers. It is not known. It also prevents group action when there's a major problem in an office. So most people in the field who feel that it is actually hurts women and it hurts all of us trying to stop sexual harassment in the office. And Facebook famously has continued on with its mandatory arbitration policy. And Sheryl Sandberg has defended that. Which is something that is problematic when you think about it.
Some may point to the idea that in this Me Too era, there may be more male executives or bosses who feel apprehensive about having dinner or traveling with a female colleague than a male colleague, the implication being that these men are worried about a possible future allegation of some sort and would rather cut women out of the process. Do you see instances where Me Too could potentially hurt women at work?
I don't want to say it could hurt women at work, but there is definitively some evidence that is going on. But I want to say, as somebody who's been in the office for a couple of decades now, I saw that also happen after the Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky scandal. So I think this comes and goes in waves. Sheryl, the Lean In organization's response to Me Too, I should say, was to urge men to mentor women. which really isn't a very adequate response because, among other things, mentoring, you know, is informal for the most part. For men, people don't walk up to men and say, I'm going to mentor you, right? And it doesn't seem to really help anybody to just urge people to mentor women. You know, mentoring is a voluntary activity, and it just, it's one of those things that had it worked, it would have worked by now.
Talking with Helene Olin right now, her recent article in The Nation is titled 5 Years Later, Lean In Seems Like a Relic from Another Time. Gathering your thoughts on Lean In at 800-642-1234. Does the Lean In message still make sense in the era of Me Too? Where do you see women challenging the power structure in society as opposed to just fitting into it? Did you read Lean In at any point in the last 5 years? And how did you apply it to your life? Was it applicable? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Helene, in 2018, is it a time to rethink the definition of what leaning in is? Does that make sense right now where we are?
I think that was the argument of my piece, ultimately, is that many women are indeed leaning in. But at this point, it has well gone beyond their own personal careers. And it's really fallen into, challenging power and challenging politics as we practice it in this country. And I think the Me Too movement was probably the most, the biggest blow up of it in terms of the office. But we could also see it coming in our politics, where we have more women running for office than we've had in a very long time, where women are flooding, especially on the Democratic side, literally flooding into, making calls, knocking on doors, party organization structures. There was a great article published within the past month in the journal Democracy, a study of, women sort of coming in to Pennsylvania politics, which was just sort of fascinating, and how, and this, also comes back to some of the Lean In philosophy, where these women were showing up at these meetings, these party meetings, and the powers that be were not always happy to have all these suddenly eager volunteers show up, and there were numerous instances of consultants telling them, patting them on the head and saying, oh, this is how we do things, and people saying, well, that's how you've lost all these elections, and people coming in and, refusing to tell them where committee meetings met. It turns out it just wasn't as easy as sort of, coming in and trying to make your case.
It also seems interesting, too, but Lean In has also had very much a PR force behind it. There were, based on the book, all of these Lean In circles where women would get together in groups on a regular basis and discuss career, discuss their futures, discuss elements from the book. Have those made any impact?
Well, I think some of them are still around. And, look, there's no question they probably made an impact on some people's, personal careers. But, what was interesting to me is how many of them, if you go on Twitter or Facebook, you can see how many of them have actually turned up at the women's marches and are clearly also moving in the direction of taking their interests out of the personal and into the political.
I'm also wondering about Anne-Marie Slaughter in all of this. She famously wrote the piece, Why Women Can't Have It All. It appeared in The Atlantic. That was back in 2012, which seemed to start many of the conversations that we're still having today. This piece was widely circulated. Lots of people read it. It also feels like maybe we wouldn't have had Lean In had it not been for her article. Do you think Slaughter's message holds up today?
That's a really good question. I think she articulated something that is still an ongoing issue, which is, and I think Lean In sort of tried to work around, but ultimately didn't very well, which is that the workplace can be very hostile to anybody who wants to have, a quality family life, so to speak, that it is almost impossible in some ways to be you know, what we consider today a good parent and a good worker. And I think that that was a really important conversation to have. And I think it ultimately is still ongoing because, you know, nothing has really changed very much on that front.
And it's interesting, at that point, Anne-Marie Slaughter was working in government and commuting from, you know, her base in Princeton, going home on weekends, trying to keep up with two teenage sons. And what was interesting about that piece to me, too, was that here is a government worker who is saying, look, this just doesn't work. The time off schedule, the demands of the job. And that was because many people work in government in this country. And to me, that also was, that really was resonating in her piece.
Well, what resonates so much is I think this was one of the things in the piece, as I remember it, is you're never off, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are, you know, because of, you know, technology, you can be reached at any time. And this sort of encompasses everybody, whether you're sort of a high-earning professional, you know, with a supervisor who's texting you, at, you know, sending emails at midnight, which I think has happened to a lot of us. Or keep in mind, even, you know, if you're just a shift worker at a fast food restaurant, you don't have a set schedule anymore. You know, you work on call for the most part. So you're literally also a slave to, you know, technology in a way, where you have to check, am I working, am I not working, am I on, do I arrange childcare? And again, even if you're only getting 15 hours a week, you're on all the time, right? Or you're potentially on. And I think that that's something that, you know, goes way beyond, you know, just trying to take control of your career.
So since then, Anne-Marie Slaughter has backed off somewhat of what she said in the piece, but she also changed her main argument a bit, saying that no one, not just women, can have it all. So do you buy that? Is that a better approach to it?
That's, you know, I always find the can you have it all conversation to me, and this is not Anne-Marie Slaughter's fault, I should say, because headlines are headlines, right? Is it always feels like slightly like a relic of the 1970s. Of course nobody can have it all, right? This is always assumed. But I think what people have come to identify as it is that just you can be successful in the workplace and still have some form of personal life. And I think that is somewhat more likely to be true for men than for women to this day.
She also says that not to lean out totally, not to get off track in your career, but she used the word to defer, kind of plateau in place while you're trying to perhaps juggle demands and family and just not lean in so much. What do you make of that?
I think it works for some people, and I think it doesn't for others. And it can work for both personal or not work and professional reasons. I mean, people, as I always say, Americans' self-help advice often forgets that people get tired and they need to sleep and they need to rest. They need time to themselves. But also, you need an office that cooperates with you or a workplace that cooperates with you. And while some people have that, and I think by definition, the people who write these books often have it, right? Because if they didn't, they wouldn't be in that position to write the book. The fact of the matter is a lot of people don't have that.
Critics say the lean-in message is reserved for a privileged class, but the message has resonated. The book has been translated into 30 languages. It's led to 35,000 lean-in discussion groups around the world. Has it made a difference? We're talking about that with writer Helene Olin. You can join in the conversation. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update here on the Ideas Network. Bloomberg reporters attributed lean in to some brighter spots in society today. They said, quote, you can see it in the marches, in the push for companies to release their salary data, in the record-setting 79 women running to be state governors this fall. We're exploring the impact of lean in 5 years after Facebook chief operating officer Sheryl Sandberg wrote the book on how modern women should navigate the workforce and crack the proverbial glass ceiling. Did you read Lean In at any point in the last 5 years? Did it change the way you approached issues in your workplace? Does the Lean In message still make sense in the era of Me Too? Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Author Helene Owen stays with us. She's been writing about the anniversary for The Nation magazine. Helene, whenever I see a piece in the news of a female CEO, I'm always reading it in search of this secret sauce, this sage advice. And I'm always let down a bit because there's nothing in it that's really meaty that I can take away from that. Do you find a similar situation? Do you put yourself in that situation where you try to find insights and perhaps they're just not there?
All the time. My famous example is I both rant and look for this, where if you're reading a profile of a man versus a woman, right, there's always mention of how many children she has. And men, you rarely see that, actually, or it's buried at the end of the story somewhere, right? And in one sense, you know, you're like, yes, this is unfair. But on the other hand, I always say I am always looking for that, too, because I want to know how they did it. And I think I have the same experience all the time where you read the advice and it just feels kind of pat in the end. Like, well, this is what I did and it worked. And I think some of it is actually attributable to the fact that most of us, we don't think of ourselves as that special in some ways. We take our own talents for granted. And so when you read somebody like Sandberg, say, who is supposedly a people person at like the 100th percentile, basically, right, where she is just apparently has these amazing, amazing people skills. And you're trying to take advice away. There is no advice to be taken away because there are talents that she has that I might not have to that extent. And there's really no way to make that happen. And at the same time, she's not completely acknowledging that because she takes them for granted.
I was reading yesterday the Neiman Marcus profile in the Wall Street Journal of Karen Katz, who's stepping down as CEO of Neiman Marcus. And of course, it was a profile of a woman CEO, but something about it trading in her CEO for comfortable shoes just rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know. It's like, oh, come on. Did we have to go there? And, you know, it was a female writer who used those words.
Right, and I think, as I said, I think it goes back to the example I used about children, right? It's on one hand, it's like, we're all doing, you know, let's not do this again, right? It's such an easy trope to fall into. But on the other hand, it's the trope we often use in our own lives. So it's really easy to sort of fall into that. And I didn't read the Neiman Marcus profile, so I can't really comment on it, but I will say that, you know, Neiman Marcus has had, you know, a couple of fairly, like most retailers in the internet era, has had some fairly troubled times, and that wouldn't surprise me if that factored in here.
So let's say that Sheryl Sandberg in 2018 decided to write a sequel to Lean In. What would you like to see in the book, and what message should it send?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen the way I want it, but I think it would need to encompass the Me Too movement and the women's marches, and make it explicitly political, that women are behind for reasons that are structural and have to do with the power structure in this country, and that that's not going to change very easily, and that people do need to organize and fight back. And I think that would be the main message that would have to be taken away. People are not going to counter sexual harassment one by one. Ultimately, that has to really be cracked down upon from, you know, the top down. You're not going to go in and make your case about why you shouldn't be sexually harassed. That's just absurd. And to be fair to Sandberg, she never did that in Lean In. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it sort of shows the systemic nature of the problem that people are up against. And I think that's ultimately where Lean In kind of collapsed, so to speak.
Can the power dynamics in workplaces in this country, can that change only through the courts? Is there another way?
I think there is one other way, and I think we might be partially seeing it now, which is that the power structure in workplaces, to the extent that it will shift, shifts when workers have the upper hand. And for the past really 20 years, really probably longer, workers have not had the upper hand in any way. And it's not just because there are systemic issues of power and law, but also because we've been dealing, for the most part, with very scattered periods where there are many more people for jobs than there are openings. And it's probably no coincidence that a lot of this, the Me Too action and the renewed force on women's place in the workplace, really came in the past couple of years as the job market once again loosened up, and that there was some more room to maneuver, because that is actually when you have the most power.
Teresa tweeted at WPR Mornings, and she writes, "I'm a female firefighter, EMT, paramedic student. There is a huge push for more women to join the force. It's a great family to be a part of and a fun and challenging job to have." So there, with Teresa's comment, maybe more women can push into fields typically dominated by men.
Right, and the openings have to be there. And again, that's, you know, one of the my points is that, you know, when there are more job openings, there will be more progress made, for the rather obvious reason that they need you and that they you will be accommodated more. And one other point I should make is that there is evidence to show that, and this goes back to the firefighter example, by the way, is that workplaces that are unionized tend to protect women and minorities better than those that are not. Again, because there is something with a group force countering the power structure of the office or workplace.
But we're seeing union busting around the country, although in West Virginia, example, with teacher marches there. But do you see that unions a very fraught issue as well?
Well, I mean, unions are declining in American life. So by definition, it is a fraught issue. But, you know, there's no question that where they exist, they do help people, both men and women, I should say. I mean, they tend to give, you know, very powerful workplace protections that, frankly, very few people are going to be able to get on their own.
Helene, are there advice books for women to read today, or would you say just turn away, throw out the books, and go your own course?
I would never say throw out books. I write books for a living.
Very fair.
No, absolutely not. And if you're going to get advice from LeanIn, go for it. I mean, there is some good advice in there, for what it's worth. I mean, you know, if you need to be told to lean in and to, you know, push in, it is, you know, sometimes it does help to just get a shove, right? And you can, if you get it from a book, all power to you. But I think the West Virginia case is actually another example, and we're now, by the way, potentially seeing another teachers at work action in Oklahoma in the next few weeks, is that ultimately, you know, we're in this as a group, even though we don't think of ourselves that way very often. And that's really the way we will, you know, get the most satisfaction in the end.
So in as a group carries more weight than trying to go your own course as an individual and knock on the supervisor's door and say, hey, I think this is unfair.
Right. I mean, how are you going to get, you know, parental leave, for instance, right? Or paid parental leave, I should say, is ultimately by organizing. I mean, you know, it's very nice that some companies are offering it to people. But, you know, ultimately, it's got to come from the top down.
Could the U.S. look to other countries then to really get a roadmap on how to treat women and all employees in the workplace?
Well, I mean, there's no perfect place, right? But certainly when it comes to family, to parental, you know, leave, we are way behind the curve. And that is one place where we could look to almost any other country.
So as we start to wrap up here, Helene, and looking now toward the future, we still see Me Too movement getting a lot of traction. Do you see Me Too as a guiding force? Will it stay with us?
Oh, that's a good question. I go back and forth on this one. I do think it will, ultimately. And I think part of it is I think we're really seeing rising tide among millennial women, who I joke are the first generation of women to truly be brought up to believe that they are equal to men, and have encountered a world in which they've discovered that the world doesn't really see it that way. And we are just seeing a rising tide of action among them, not just in Me Too, but the political engagement is fantastic. And one of the things that seems to be driving the Democratic surge, that while so much attention is being paid to the middle-aged women who are sort of flooding into these, you know, political campaigns, has actually been an amazing surge of millennial women who have shifted their allegiance from Republican or independent to Democrat, with the result now that 7 out of 10 millennial women identify as Democrat, which is an extraordinary number.
And, you know, they also may report to Gen X bosses who have perhaps a slightly different approach and maybe came of age during Sheryl Sandberg's time.
Right. And, you know, although, you know, the survey work shows that most of the differences are widely exaggerated, right? That most people across the board agree with the Me Too movement, or women, I should say, agree with the Me Too movement. The one area where there seems to be some disagreement is that younger women are more likely to say they agree that, you know, accusers should get tossed overboard, even at the price of some innocent people getting tossed overboard. If I had to make a guess, the reason for that is that they're more likely to be targeted, so to speak, by the sexual harassment issue recently.
Well, Helene, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Helene Olin is a writer and contributor to The Nation magazine. Her latest piece is 5 years later, Lean In Seems Like a Relic from Another Time. She also contributes to The Washington Post, author of Pound Foolish, Exposing the Dark Side of the Personal Finance Industry. This hour of the morning show was produced by Chris Molina and Keely Boltina. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer.